Welcome to Web3 with A16Z, a show about building the next generation of the internet from the team at A16Z Crypto. Today's episode features Tobias Lütke, CEO and co-founder of the e-commerce platform Shopify, speaking with A16Z co-founder Ben Horowitz at our second annual Founder Summit in November. They discuss what it takes to build a breakout startup in a crowded category, the changing face of retail, how to affect change in the workplace, and how to handle individual emotions and corporate culture, including dealing with calls for activism, as well as the value of embracing negativity. They also touch on the moral imperative behind creating quality software, the symbiosis between AI and crypto, and more. As a reminder, none of the following should be taken as business, legal, tax, or investment advice. Please see a16z.com/disclosures for more important information, including a link to a list of our investments.
All right. So for those of you who don't know Toby, which you probably should know Toby, you can look him up as well. But he started a snowboarding company in 2004 called Snow Devil. And he parlayed that into Shopify, which now serves millions of merchants in 175 countries around the world. How many countries are there, like, total?
I think that's most of them. There's 200?
I think 200, yeah.
It changes around the margins.
So it's more sensitive. You will get them all at some point. And then he was also interesting for this crowd. He was one of the first adopters of Coinbase Commerce. So Toby's been kind of big on crypto for a while now. But let's get started. So you started as a snowboarding company, and I always find that funny because of all the CEOs that I know, you're probably the least snowboard kickback, like, let's hit the powder, dude. So how did that happen? Like, why'd you start out that way?
Yeah. When you talk to governments, they're always, Shopify is doing a lot about entrepreneurship, which I was, I love entrepreneurship, and it's such a brilliant institution. I know everyone here is a card-carrying member of Entrepreneurship is Good Club. But politicians usually, they're sort of vague on it, but they say, like, they want to pass government programs and policies to cause more entrepreneurship, which I always think is exactly the wrong way around.
Yep.
But there's actually, the funny story is I was in Canada at this point. I came from Germany, living in Canada, 2004. And I found out I cannot actually get a job. I was trying to be hired as a computer programmer locally, but I found out I did not have a work permit. I didn't know what a work permit was. So turns out that you are in Canada allowed to start a company even without a work permit. So there's one government program that actually has led to more companies being created.
Well, that's like the best government program ever. Perfect. Just the payoff on Shopify paid for itself a million times.
So, and it turns out Canada's very cold. So I was doing snowboarding, so I knew something about it. And I started an online store for snowboarding. It's nice. It's kind of a pretty simple story like this.
That's amazing. So basically, the key to your whole career was not being able to work.
Yes. In fact, what was in my mind too is like I was sort of disillusioned with programming at this time. It was like sort of a Java world kind of very oppressive. I wanted to reclaim it as a hobby. So I was like, cool, if I sell snowboards online, I can make money while snowboarding and I get to do more fun stuff. And it's been extremely unsuccessful as a strategy. I basically never had time to snowboard again after I started.
the end of your snowboarding career was the start of your snowboarding business. That's that's pretty remarkable.
Maybe I would project more back at this point if things would have gone in a counterfactual way.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that really strikes me about Shopify is that, and I hate to say this as a venture capitalist who some people think is a smart person, but we probably would have never invested in Shopify when you started it because it was probably the most overcompeted category in the world. Like everybody had some kind of e-commerce platform. There was just so many of them. Magento, this, that, the other. So did you go, oh, no, like I'm going to build this thing it's going to dominate everything. Then I'm going to have a network effect and I'm going to build, you know, like one of the biggest things that anybody's ever seen. Like, how did you like get all the way to where you are? Like, what was that path?
Yeah. No, there's no plan like this. I think for every entrepreneur, it's a useful thing to think about what is your energy source, right? Like, what is actually driving you? Sometimes it's greed, envy, you know, like, right. Like the sort of negative emotions channeled into building are actually the most powerful energy sources.
Yeah.
I had this, you're right, like, I mean, Netscape IPO, but like you have to explain every platform in terms of an old platform and, you know, yeah. Online hosted CS catalog with buy buttons was like kind of a way you and Mark described even what the internet would be used for, right? Like, so e-commerce was like right there from the beginning. I thought there would be lots of software that I could use. And I didn't find anything. I was actually really upset with the quality of the software. And so like I channeled that into building something and that was my energy source. And I just love the building.
That's actually, by the way, one of the best entrepreneurial ideas there is which is this stuff sucks so bad.
Yeah.
I'm so mad about having to use it that I'm going to build my own.
Totally. I honestly, it fuels me to this day. I still think it's ridiculous what people are subjected to in terms of quality of software. It's like it's a weird. I probably did some like neurological like kind of rearrangement there, but like to me, this is almost a moral issue of like when. People like confused with software and they think about themselves as like being inadequate. It's like, how dare software make humans feel that way, right? Like it's just not okay. So you want to make it more approachable. But like, I think the thing that people might have missed in e-commerce or like it's not that I had a great insight. I just sort of organically got there. It's that, yes, there was a lot of e-commerce software, but it was all built for already rich retailers who needed to move online. Then that was a phrase right. People used. And there was no one started software for starting the entrepreneurial process online. Like actually the digital native, what we call it now. So like if you like that term, because there's a totally different set of requirements for people who are just starting out. And so that that's what we did. So this is the thing, right? Like it's like when you talk, that's like, I don't know, 60 words per minute or something. When you type fast, it's like twice that. But like, if you can do customer consultation in your own brain, the brain runs at like terabytes per second bandwidth, right? Like, so if you know the use case, if you're building for yourself or your past experience or some kind of, if you have a really good model of your customers or use cases in your mind, you can do customer development at high bandwidth with low latency, and you can just build something that you know needs to exist. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. So one of the things, you know, you're also kind of been, a special kind of, or a different kind of CEO than, you know, some of the ones, you know, that people read about as Satya Nadella or Bob Iger, and that you have a reputation for being extremely hands-on, including writing code. You still have the fury that started the company. How do you think about that in terms of, you know, you're not kind of paying attention to all parts of the company equally. You're clearly doing certain things and not others. How do you think about that as an effective kind of management style?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine the people in my company would disagree with your assessment that that's an effective management style. So,
well, it's worked pretty well. So
it's working, but that's like, it certainly doesn't proxy to what people sort of, like, it's not a CEO job out of central casting that I'm trying to perform, right? I tried that on and it didn't work for me at all. I actually find, I value being in all the details and I ask it from all the people who are around me and report to me, like almost everyone, especially after COVID. I turned over like everyone but one of my executives during those first 10 months of COVID. And now almost everyone reports to me. It's actually ex founder, maybe someone we acquired or someone who started a company before coming to Shopify. So because there's like this, like I find it actually really inefficient not understanding the details of what we're doing, right? Because then
you're guessing.
Then you're guessing, right? Like and you're like, well, when something goes wrong, now you not only need to fix it, you actually have to first cram for Like you have to learn like 3 months before you can actually do a fix. If you understand what's going on or what ought to be existing, it's much faster. And you want to train people on the company mission, right? Like because there's a thing that you want to exist. Like you, like even if you don't know exactly what it is, like you know which direction you want people to go, right? And getting everyone aligned to go in this direction is only possible if you can paint a picture of like how does this area actually sum together our way to helping the mission overall. And so and this is sort of unique thing about our times right now. It's like the infrastructure keeps changing. Like here's crypto, here's AI, here's I started again almost like next year, 20 years ago, right? So there was no mobile phone of the quality that we have now.
You started before the mobile phone.
So it's like that was one of the things that just sort of happened. And SaaS software even was new at this time. So you know the platform's capabilities change, and you want to adopt them to like your mission to what is now possible. And so you have to be able to understand well, but in a kind of like ideally in your head, in the world where like. I take a very long-term view, and my biggest fear that I have is that Shopify winds up being a fantastic solution to a problem that people no longer have.
Yeah,
right. Or no longer solve this way.
Right.
So I'm trying to need to keep it current and being able to run the counterfactual about this is not possible. This is what we are trying to accomplish. But if this would have been possible from the beginning, we would have built this entirely different thing. So now, our job is to get from here to there because again, we want to keep it current and ideal.
Right, that's such a great insight because I think that, when I work with CEOs and you think about the job, so much of the job is making high quality decisions and setting the direction of the company. And in some respects, neither feels like work, because you're working on something else, like how does AI work? What's possible in order to make decisions and set the direction? But what you're doing seems actually removed from anything that the company needs to do right now. And I think so many people kind of neglect that kind of thing for that reason. The other thing that I always find is at any given point in time, some things in the company are very important and very high leverage, and some things are just not important for you to put your time into.
Yep.
And people often get lost in that. They think, oh, I've got to talk to this person and then that person and then the other person and so forth. And it's like, no, you don't. You got to make good decisions. You have to set the direction. And if you don't do that, nobody's doing that. And then the company's going to fail. So that's it's such an amazing way that you've gone about that.
If you're in a small team, like for a new thing that your company needs to do, and you're in a small team of people who are figure out the shape of it early. If it's actually as important, it will itself have a gravity to change the way a company thinks about quality of software shipping, the way the architect thinks. And it's also after this comes up as a new thing, you then have ability to a type of legitimacy. As a founder, you have a huge amount of legitimacy in a company already.
Yeah.
But if you also are there with a new project that's important that needs to be resourced and say, this is what we'll do. You don't have to have all these conversations.
Right.
People love clarity of this is what we do. it has a gravity all to itself that's unlike anything you can accomplish by one-on-one consultation, trying to talk everyone through the entire decision matrix. And so
what is Toby doing over there? Oh, that must be important.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
We are doing Shopify Sidekick now. And then I don't have to figure out yes, there's 15 teams that are already doing AI stuff and I ought to be in some kind of constellation. But now this AI assistant thing is going to run through and the company, everyone wants to be a part of it, and it's just all these problems kind of disappear. It's it's maybe not the most effective.
It's like a magic trick.
Yeah. Actually, I think, by the way, everyone in this, everyone here has clearly read your books, and if you haven't, then do that. I think...
Thank you.
The best books on leadership, honestly. Thank you so much for sharing all this. I think somewhere that you described, but there's very few things, ways to do change management. One way of doing it is do something super, super, super surprising and then explain everyone why you did it.
Yeah.
It's the fastest way to get a large company. Shopify is about 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Much, much, much faster way to do change management than hand-to-hand combat.
It's like shock therapy. It's like, what the fuck was that? Oh, well, this was what that was. Oh, okay, got it. It's very, very, very high retention on that. So let's talk about, you know, one of the things that has come up, you know, a lot over the years that you had probably, you know, maybe the best statement on, I thought, is politics, activism, how that's kind of come into companies, has taken over a lot of the activity of companies. And how do you think about that? And then why'd you say what you said? And then how's that going? And then how are you able to sustain it, particularly as things get even hotter now with, you know, what's going on in the Middle East and so forth? You know, it's gotten even more intense than it was, you know, amazingly in 2020.
Mm. That's it's a complex topic. Again, here's there's a lot of conflicting ideas about what people want companies to be. And, you know, I think, especially 2010 and maybe now again, a lot of people would like companies to play the role of some kind of phantom limb of what I think the whole left over by the stories that people are surrounded with, like maybe with governments or like so on. Suddenly people want, I have gotten tons and tons of petitions for Shopify to take stances on issues, and I think everyone's feeling the same thing. This was weird to me, but I found myself generally agreeing with what people identify as the problems when this happens.
Yeah.
But I found myself very rarely, if ever, really agreeing with the proposed solutions to those problems. And I think it's kind of important to say, like, hey, unless we are all aligned on this, we're probably not doing this. Because, you know, at the end of the day, like, companies ought to be thought of as a bit of a simpler thing. It's, you know, we love entrepreneurship. Yeah. Entrepreneurship is, you know, liberal values kind of institution of, you know, you're like reaching for independence, reaching for like to better yourself, like building something like enlightened, the ideas of enlightened self-interest. There is a bit of a political coding in this. People at least think so. And someone else might take a totally different opinion about all these kind of things. So that's cool. The cool thing is companies are themselves explorations into a set of ideas, sometimes encoded in the mission, sometimes by the founders. And if we make every company the same, then we lose that. That's actually like a weird form of diversity itself, if you think about it. So anyway, I went ahead and just like said, like, look, we cause more entrepreneurship to exist. And sometimes there are social causes that are aligned with this. And then maybe we become active because of our mission. But outside of that, you know, everyone makes money and you can do whatever you want in your after hours. And that's just a simpler way of thinking about the business. Of course, that's not universally loved, but like, after being very, very clear about it and explaining it, you know, we give everyone, when we hire people, a letter of like, here are the reason, like before you sign, here's the reason why you might not want to work for Shopify, because here's a set of ideas that you disagree with. And again, that clarity is wonderful. We keep everything so nebulous. I think the world of marketing and PR has just done a number on us all to be so non-committal to everything.
Yeah.
And the problem is, if you're non-committal, you leave a lot of vacuum. And that vacuum is going to be filled by someone. And it's usually the people who want to fill it with bad faith takes who fill it. So if you're just clear about it, it works. Sometimes, this is something I might get into hot water with, but like sometimes it's actually good to heighten the misalignment with the kind of people that you don't think should be working in a company. Like, hey, we work hard and it's kind of an...
We have poor work-life balance. Sorry.
That's a good...
You are free to work elsewhere.
If it's true, put it up, like light it up on a sign, because otherwise you're going to end up with the weirdest divisiveness in a company because of basically false advertising. So I think it's better to just be clear. So, I mean, what is it like? There's a lot goes into this. Like, again, culture is unstable. We know from the internet that every community that anyone likes, Reddit, like Hacker News, if anyone actually likes this page, it's a product of unbelievably dedicated moderators who are keeping the discourse well. I think that's an idea that I think companies have started adopting too. Like once you're a couple of thousand people, your Slack channel is the internet basically, and you need to apply similar rules. You need to be able to take people to a side and saying, hey, here's the thing you're causing when you're sending a message to a channel with 3,000 people in it. That is basically the same as you spending a day typing individual text message to every person in the channel. And would you do that? If no, probably don't put in, you know, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's really, yeah, it's such a great insight that you had that. Hey, actually, I kind of agree with the intentions that people have on most of this, just not with the ideas on how to achieve those intentions, because that's where politics gets really dangerous in a company. And I have a funny story about this. So my great uncle Harold, my grandmother, didn't speak for 20 years, brother and sister. And I asked my father, you know, a few years ago, I said, like, what happened there? Why didn't they speak? He's like, oh, well, because your great uncle Harold was a Trotskyist. And I was like, well, what was grandma? She was a Stalinist. They're two slightly different kinds of communists. And they didn't speak for 20 years. And that's kind of what happens inside a company. You know, it's not like you're a good person, you're a bad person, this is a moral issue. It's like, well, yeah, we all want way fewer people to get killed in this current conflict, but how you achieve that gets very complicated very fast. And so if you let people attack each other, shut down conversations, intimidate each other inside your company around that, you know, it's just all bad.
Yeah, the fighting gets the fiercest when the stakes are the lowest.
Yeah.
You know, like when people almost agree, when they become mortal enemies.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very funny effect. I mean, you can...
Right, in a way, the closer they are, the
closer
they
are,
the
more. Yeah, exactly. It's not the way you'd think. I think at the end of the day, basically, what you have to avoid is divisiveness. We have a no asshole rule in a company, like most companies, I think, many companies choose. I think it's actually a valid opinion to choose the opposite and like say we are perfectly fine with brilliant jerks. Like that's actually a stable equilibrium you can choose as well. But like. You have to be all in on that. You know, I think it's actually useful to reframe like active divisiveness as like othering a part of the same company as a act of an asshole. I think that actually kind of transcends a lot of these conversations because it gets away from the issue. It's never about the issue. It's actually about the behavior by people around the issue. That is the problem in a company, right? So just say... Make it if you manage to make it a norm to say this is just simply not what happens on company-funded internet servers such as Slack. Everything gets simpler.
Take that outside, outside the virtual.
Maybe one last point. One book that really, really helped me figuring this out was Thomas Sowell's Conflict of Visions, which is an underappreciated book, I think.
Phenomenal book.
Very, very good. Even if you read the first three chapters, suddenly you realize why everyone's actually kind of right, except comes from a different sort of philosophical prior.
No question. You were into crypto very, very early on. Why? And then, you know, how do you think, you know, given kind of how things have unfolded, how the technology's developed, how the kind of regulatory uncertainty has played, like, how are you thinking about it now, kind of in the context of Shopify in the world?
Yeah, a couple of angles to that. First of all, I make a habit, like, so growing up in a very small town in Germany, not being like I didn't know anyone who was into computers the way I was, like until late in my teens and I moved away basically. I think I built some skills around like outside observation, like just sort of monitor. Like I tried to figure out everything that's going on in, you know, the Silicon Valley when I figured out what that was. But like I downloaded like the Linux kernel source code and mailing lists back in those days, Usenet. So I could study it all. So I'm like, it's weird because I'm clearly an insider now, but like I've sort of lived and built skills around outside observation. So I make it a habit to like find the areas where there's the most passion and most highest stakes and the most talent, and like where people are just having a brainstorm about what the future's like. I find that this is to me like watching television. Like it's so great. Crypto is such a wellspring of brilliant insight into like amazing technologies and so on. So because of that, I studied. I find like consumer internet, mobile apps in China around 2010, 2015. So yeah. Times like there's these pockets. So that was sort of my angle. I did make a Ruby implementation in 2012 of a blockchain paper of Satoshi's mm-hmm. paper. So like it's been on my mind, and just because I also love decentralization of. I mean, just like giving people power, right? Entrepreneurships, Shopify is just like give people.
It's actually the true power yes. to the people is decentralization.
Exactly.
The false one is communism, by the way.
So there's hundreds of ways how that draw me into this, which are my personal ones. What I was hoping for is like something more practical, because my favorite thing is if people that I things that I find super interesting end up like coming sort of in the vicinity of commerce, at which point I get to play with like I can do it from workday rather than in the evening. I love it from a technology perspective. I love it from a sort of philosophical perspective. Obviously at some point people like want to use it for clearing like buying products and so on. We've supported this in any way we could for as long as we could have. The demand has been low for using it for physical products because, you know, perspective, there's some advantage of credit cards. But like, it is crazy to me that at this point, the internet just doesn't have native currency. We will get there. I think people in this room hopefully will play a leading role in this. Again, from a personal philosophical perspective, I was on the internet in the 90s and of course used Netscape when it came along, Mosaic actually before that. It's just this incredible experience of like in the future, like everyone will be able to contribute and this is going to distribute power in a way that is like unanticipated and not understood. Shopify itself is a little bit like stuck in this sort of 90s view of the internet. Like it's, mm-hmm. I know it's hosted software, so it doesn't conform directly to everyone has their own server, but like you have your own website. It's like something you can own. Like you can own a domain, you can own, the design of your system. You can reach your independence, and that's important. And then I think this is like, people have like, my one criticism to the previous sort of wave of crypto has been that this idea of decentralization is too technical. Like, mm-hmm. it's like, I know people in the community care, but like no one else cares about that right. definition of, like what we need to figure out, like crypto needs friends, and the best angle to find friends is to find the fellow travelers who are trying to move power to individuals again, so that people can just like are not relying on like a central marketplace, for instance, right. also somewhere which is, has its own gatekeeper rules, or where the fees move to exactly what your margin is and eradicate your ability to actually have a sustainable business. And so that's really, really attracted me to that.
Yeah, so it almost needs a campaign like kick the ass of the tech overlords. Like we're going to give the technology back to the people. We're going to take it from
the internet.
Google and Meta and Amazon and et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think what started with everyone start your own web server, everyone write your own HTML, is actually alive and well if you just change the framing away from the exact technical implementation.
Right.
And so that's a better, I think, more larger group. You can build a movement around that. You can't build a movement around using the yagmi.js, right? Like it's like that's not this is not how you start a movement.
Excellent point. One last question, then we'll go to audience questions. So you've been doing a lot of kind of experimentation now with AI. And then interestingly, you know, kind of as with crypto, there's this huge push to regulate AI. What do you think that means for kind of the industry and the world? And is it a good idea, a bad idea?
I think regulating AI at this point is a bad idea. I think regulation around crypto, I might not be quite so, like, I think regulative clarity is what we should want.
Right.
I don't think you can get that by having no regulation, because it's just a regulated field, but it should be extremely permissive and for experimentation. I think we found out some of the things that the financial system had are things that are deeply desirable in crypto as well, one way or another. I'm sure there's, like, everyone can take a different position on this, but, like, that's there. In an AI case, man, like, I just, like, you gotta, like, you can regulate institutions or, like, ground rules for markets, but regulating technology is, like, that seems like a crazy position to take. Like, suddenly floating points are, like, illegal after you do too many of them.
It is so weird. I had a conversation with a policymaker, and I was like, so if this was nuclear, you want regulate nukes, you'd regulate physics. That's your idea. Like, physics is now illegal.
Yeah, it's also, I guess,
throw away those textbooks immediately, please.
Yeah. So I think maybe even some of the things that people have identified as potential problems in the future, I guess we could agree with. But, like, again, the proposed solutions to this are crazy, because we get into these insane places where, like, cool, maybe analog computing is actually better for training neural nets, so that is not floating point operations anymore.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's just like, we're doing that now because of regulations instead of because of pragmatism, or you know, it just, I don't know, it just seems too early, I think that it's a very, very bad idea right now for any governments to set ceilings and rules that are especially onerous for startups, because I think all you're going to get out of that is just you're going to get the place where it's going to be all behind for-pay APIs that are going to be all controlled by very, very few. I mean, that's strictly better than it doesn't exist, granted, but, like, clearly we need open source. Look at everything that happened just now after, you know, AI became available first, and then thanks to Meta and releasing the amazing Llama models, we know so much more about what neurons do. We know so much more about what how to accelerate this. You need to rescue these things sometimes from the ivory towers, and you have to give them to the tinkerers and the people who remember how to memory align things and what, you know, how to get the most out of a hardware. Like, that's a different crowd than the people who are writing Python neural topologies. And it's, we need everyone on this, and then we're going to get the best outcome, because it is foundational for our future.
Yeah.
Also, we need to figure out how to make crypto closer aligned with AI, because it's a natural way for how to pay for micropayments and tokens and so on. And this is really, really important now.
Well, and solve so many. I mean, it's interesting. Crypto solves so many AI problems, and AI solves so many crypto problems.
Yeah.
They're good.
These should be symbiotic, and just the sine waves of excitement of these two areas just happen to be dissonant right now, and we need to make them harmonious.
Partly because of the bad big companies. Sorry. Well, that's great. So we are ready to take questions. Any questions you may have? Yes, sir, back there.
If crypto plays out in exactly the way you're excited about, what could it look like for Shopify and Sensors?
It's like, I think very naturally the browser will just, like, be able to move value around, and you will want to your value in a way that can be addressed by the browser. This is, like, you can get pretty close to that, but you would have to squint, and you have to deal with, like, poor UX, and you have to deal with hard on ramps. I don't think anything kind of magical happens, other than that people will have, like, need more utilitarian ability to, like, use money. Again, I think, if you run the counterfactual and say OpenAI just for whatever reason couldn't work for Stripe and just decided to, I don't know, like, use some level two blockchain and to move, to pay for tokens as a initial, like, MVP, people would now move incredible amounts of money around and build startups that might have these kind of ideas that Sam talked about on stage, about people you know, sharing value of creating GPTs and like all of the, you know, the blockchain. Like, if you look at the OpenAI Dev Days, like, especially the last 20 minutes, And you open at the same time VS Code to an Ethereum contract. You can basically write it out while he's talking. It's like, so we have this incredible infrastructure, but we can't use it, partly because of fees, partly because of speeds, because like we gotta solve the infrastructure problems, which I know we are doing. Like this is, people are building through this particular winter in a way that is like, seems utterly ideal to, from my perspective. So that's great. We need to bring killer use cases. We need to find, we need to have people want to use this. Unfortunately, there is the progress on these kind of things, especially once you need culture and social things, is annoyingly not linear. And that's really trips everyone up. It's like, it's nothing, everything. And we have to get, we have to like toil in obscurity to build up the infrastructure until it can support the kind of way that people want to use it. And then we need to catch lightning in a bottle.
Yes.
Thanks, Toby. I had a question. So Shopify works with a lot of merchants and brands that might not be as tech savvy or might not understand everything that's going on in like AI or crypto. How does Shopify think about messaging to those merchants and saying, hey, this is the future, these are the things that you should be using?
Yeah, I think people actually hire us, quote unquote, for helping them be ideal for whatever the internet is and for whatever, however their buyers, they want to continue buying. Like again, we start before mobile phones, and so like just making sure that everyone's store was available on just on mobile phones back in those days, responsive, whatever, just helped tremendously, because their colleagues who didn't have that just started doing poor and poor as money moved to the small form factors, and they started out competing their peers in the industry. So as this is a super old and probably dumb example, but what I'm saying is the demand has to come up. The merchants offering, you can't solve this problem just simply by bringing the supply side up. The demand side needs to go up. The buyers should want to spend on the blockchain. Now, that is, but here's the beauty. You have 3% to work with here. The credit card fees are high, right? There's a lot of interesting incentive systems that you can do. But what I found was the most amazing thing about sort of when I came back to crypto, paid more attention, smart contracts, Ethereum, is that I actually think even the practitioners in the crypto space are underappreciating this as a talent, is there's never been a field of such applied, widely distributed, and high-quality thought applied game theory, right? It's the amount of the constructions and the incentive systems that are being built in this community are tremendous. The artists that have done really, really well through NFTs are such a good example. This is the first. I know this is this was the first business model of arts that we've gotten since patronage times, right? This is a huge breakthrough, and we'll make a comeback. This thought, this quality of thought, has to be applied, I think, to all sorts of other areas and in different ways. And we can use the infrastructure that's been built to do something way better than cashback credit cards, with those extra 3%. Now, it needs to also meet the world where it is. We require some kind of escrow systems for chargeback. There is real distribution. There needs to be, not everything has to be trustless. We should bring trust brokers into the systems. It's called a wallet, which I think is a good name. But in my wallet, I don't think I have cash in my wallet. It's all cards. It's licenses. It's driver license and so on, right? It's attestations that I'm who I say I am. And bringing in trust brokers into the system through the primitives we have now, and saying, yeah, that person is who they say they are. Yes, that person can be shipped to. If you write this thing on a package destination, FedEx knows how to uncloak this into an actual destination address. We have to build this with the industry, and then at some point, we're gonna just have a much better environment for commerce, and it's not slightly better than using credit. It can actually be 10 times better. People move around more since COVID, right? how often have you like gotten a package to some other address that you're no longer there? Like this it would be wonderful to make addresses pointers that can be updated there in the background and so on, so on, so on. So like work with the actual infrastructure of the world and modernize it on these new systems. And so that all that wantages accrue to people who want to take advantage, like who actually live in a real world and not just like behind some synonymous, abstraction. I think that's absolutely doable. But man, do we have to get fees down? And this is like it's never going to happen if we go back to $50 a transaction.
Yes. Yeah. We've got time for one more question. Yes, right in the front row, since I saw you first.
So Shopify has a really successful partner program where engineers are building themes and plugins and apps. Could you talk a bit more about some of the challenges starting that system up? And then also, as you see more and more people speak the language of NFTs and the EVM, how that can evolve as we get more interoperability?
This is definitely, like you're sort of hinting at how cool would it have been to have these pieces of infrastructure primitives and we could have governed the entire partner system on a token economy, right? Like that's totally true. I really hope someone is going to explore how to build systems like the Shopify ecosystem, because there's a lot of sharing and a lot of multi-wallet transactions, which we are all doing with ledgers in the background. Booting up any two-sided marketplace is tricky. You have to overcome the chicken and egg problems. It's tricky, but if you manage to do it, it's also really, really self-sustaining afterwards. We have, one of the greatest things is like we have about five different customers worth, merchants who start on Shopify who now IPO'd and are public companies. We now have one who is built an app like on the Shopify app with their own private company, Klaviyo. Public company Klaviyo is now, and they're very, very successful, which is awesome. Again, this is a wonderful thing of what you can do. Like companies are estimated to produce about 6 times more value than they capture. To the world, like the enlightened self-interest and all this, the constrained vision in Sowell's terms is real. There's so many ways to build, like so many businesses lend themselves to being turned into platforms later. The problem is everyone tries to build a platform first, and that's really, really, really hard. It's much better to extract a platform out of a working, a working piece of software that people are already using. And so that helped us. Like people were already trading themes as zip files. And we were like, okay, well, we can help with that. And people are already building things for themselves on the APIs for, integrating their own ERP systems. And then building this to the point where, you could list this ERP connector and build it, like our SDKs made it so that it's can be installed in many stores. By default, we give you a right, like we hinted people and helped them into the right direction. And all these kind of things ended up being incredibly valuable for the community. It's definitely one of the coolest aspects to build. But again, it's what it, at the end of the day, what all of this is you build really good software that solves real problems very, very quickly. And then you build a bit of a game theoretical system on top in which people being selfish about wanting to build something accrue a huge amount of value to the community, to Shopify, to the merchants, and so on. And I mean, I feel like the most sophisticated thought along those lines on Shopify is a fairly amateur sort of baby's first incentive system compared to some of the things that were built on, Ethereum and the blockchains in terms of sophistication, except everything in the world of crypto was so pointed at financialization and finances that I think people might have missed what could be done if you think more about products rather than financial products. And I think that's hopefully going to be next wave crypto is going to be more products and solving real problems for people.
On that amazing insight, I would love to please join me in thanking Coby.
Thank you.